Devakritam Devakrityam Avashesham Pratikshate Avadyuyam Avekshadvam Bhavidyavad Iheshwara.
The Lord has already performed His duties to help the demigods, and He is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord descends from His abode, Krishna Loka, the topmost planet in the spiritual sky, in order to help the demigod administrators of this material world when they are greatly vexed by the asuras, who are envious not only of the Lord but also of His devotees. As referred to above, the conditioned living beings contact material association by their own choice, dictated by a strong desire to lord it over the resources of the material world and become imitation lords of all they survey. Everyone is trying to become an imitation God. There is keen competition amongst such imitation gods, and such competitors are generally known as asuras. When there are too many asuras in the world, then it becomes a hell for those who are devotees of the Lord. Due to the growth of the asuras, the mass of people who are generally devoted to the Lord by nature and the pure devotees of the Lord, including the demigods and higher planets, pray to the Lord for relief. And the Lord either descends personally from His abode or deputes some of His devotees to remodel the fallen condition of human society or even animal society. Such disruptions take place not only in human society, but also among animals, birds, or other living beings, including the demigods and the higher planets. Lord Sri Krishna descended personally to vanquish asuras such as Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupal. And during the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, almost all these asuras were killed by the Lord. Now we are awaiting the annihilation of His own dynasty, called the Yadu Vamsa, who appeared by His will in this world. He wanted to take them away before His own departure to His eternal abode. Narada, like Vidura, did not disclosed the imminent annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, but indirectly gave a hint to the king and his brothers to wait till the incident happened and the Lord departed. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Maharaj Yudhisthira lamenting, considering perhaps he had committed some offense to cause Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Vidura to depart from his home. Such an exalted consciousness gives us an understanding of why he was so dear to Lord Krishna. Krishna became the servant of the Pandavas, conquered by the love of his devotees. How he, as Parthasarathi, was the chariot driver of Arjuna. How he was the messenger of Yudhisthira. Why Krishna, who is the supreme controller, the master of everyone, becomes the servant of his devotee? This is clearly revealed, the qualities that conquer Krishna, the quality of bhakti. We are celebrating the month of Kartik, where every day we come together to sing this beautiful, beautiful prayer in which the supreme glory of bhakti is being illustriously glorified. How Krishna becomes subordinate to the sweetness of the love of his devotee. Krishna, how he kills the most powerful demons like Hiranyakashipu, but how he becomes the humble servant of little Prahlad. How he destroys great, great, great asuras like Putana, but follows obediently with even fear in his heart what Mother Yashoda orders him to do. How he destroys, conquers such great asuras as Agha, massive, massive serpent, and yet he carries the shoes of his father, Nanda Maharaj, on his head, bringing them when he comes home simply to give Nanda Maharaj pleasure. How the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who destroyed even such demons in Dwarka as Shalva, who was such a mystic, he had such terrible powers that from Lord Shiva and other demigods he had the benedictions of massive airplanes that could perform supernatural feats. And yet he washes the feet of Sudama, Vipra, and serves him with his own hands. This is the wonderful opulence of the Supreme Lord. In fact, this is the greatest opulence. Although he has all strength, all knowledge, all wealth, all fame, all beauty, all renunciation, he is the complete whole, yet his heart is so beautiful with divine, infinite love that he takes pleasure not in displaying these opulences, but he takes greater pleasure in subordinating himself to the opulence of the love of his devotees. When Krishna was bound by Mother Yashoda, he actually took the position that his mother defeated him, that she was stronger than him. And when he would wrestle with Sridhama, Sridhama would defeat him. How is it that Krishna, whose mere partial expansion of Ananta Shesha is carrying the universes on his hoods, that he is being beaten physically by his own little friend, who's just a child? It is this aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that most attracts the hearts of the bhaktas. Until we understand and learn the power and glory of God, we cannot truly appreciate what type of love he manifests when he becomes subordinate to the power of the love of his devotee. On one hand, he lifts the mighty Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. But on the other hand, when the gopis clap, according to their clapping, he dances to make them satisfied. This is Krishna. And what are those qualities that create such a longing for the Lord to lovingly reciprocate with his devotees? In this chapter, it is so wonderfully explained. The heart of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was so forgiving. He was so gentle. He was so kind. Even though for the service of the Lord, with his bows and his arrows and his armies, he fought ferociously on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was willing to do that for the Lord. Actually, that was a great austerity for Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was willing and ready to let Duryodhana have the kingdom. He would have been satisfied with one tiny village. And even without that village, he was actually content to live in the forest if that was the will of the Lord. But because Krishna wanted him to fight, he fought. And he fought wholeheartedly for the service of the Lord. But Dhritarashtra, the father of Duryodhana, was so easily forgiven. Even Duryodhana himself, after being cheated, after Duryodhana attempted to kill them by burning them, such a terrible, cruel death. He wanted to burn them alive in a house where they would be caught with no escape. Painful, painful death. Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra agreed to this proposal. Terrible, vicious, cruel. Cheated in the game of dice, poisoned his own brother Bhima, who was more dear to him than life, banished them to the forest. Above and beyond that, he wasn't even satisfied that he took everything away and was forced them to live like hermits in the jungle, but he wanted to insult them. When Duryodhana came specifically to add insult to injury, he was challenged by a Gandharva. He was defeated. And Yudhisthira Maharaj told his brothers, "We must go, we must help Duryodhana. We must fight for him. We must protect him." He was willing not only to forgive him, but to extend and take risks to help him. This is the heart of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is merciful to everyone, kind, compassionate, even to one's enemies. For practical social purposes, to protect the innocent, sometimes, by the will of the Lord, like Yudhisthira, we may fight against our enemies.
But actually, a devotee knows no hate. A devotee knows no dislike. A devotee is actually loving, willing to help and forgive whenever the possibility comes. And this is the mood of a preacher. A preacher is declaring war against Maya. A preacher is in the battlefield, fighting against all immoralities, all ignorance and illusion, all sub-religious principles, trying to cut through with the weapon of transcendental knowledge a person's heart and mind and bring him to the state of the loving service of the Lord. And in this process, sometimes we saw that Srila Prabhupada was like a warrior. How he would attack. He would attack various forms of ignorance in this material world. But yet, those very persons who are carrying the torch of that ignorance and misleading so many others, in his heart, he was actually trying to help them, trying to serve them. It was done out of compassion, never out of hatred, never out of spite, never out of revenge. He was willing to forgive. Ultimately, he only had one desire, that even the greatest enemies of bhakti, he wanted them to somehow or other go back home, back to Godhead, and enjoy an eternal life with Krishna. And was willing to do everything he could to help. So when we have this consciousness of such purity, selflessness, and compassion, which is so difficult, because the false ego is so great. We want to be the Lord, as Srila Prabhupada explains. We want to be imitation lords of all we survey in this material world. And there is so much fighting, but this fighting is not done out of compassion or selfless service like Yudhisthira. The fighting of this world is out of competition of who could exploit more of the resources of material nature. It is based on envy. We are envious of God. We are envious of the Lord. And therefore we are potentially envious of anyone who threatens our position in any way of being the Lord. And the more we become infatuated and intoxicated by power and wealth and fame, the more envious we become. That is our tendency. Because the more we become under the illusion that I am the Lord, and the more it becomes intolerable to see someone else a better Lord than me. And therefore we see that there's no satiation, there's no satisfaction in this world. Just like Vamanadeva told Bali Maharaj, you have conquered the whole universe and still you're doing yajnas because you want more. You're still not satisfied. I'm a beggar with nothing more than my pot and my stick, and I'm satisfied. Because I have found peace within my heart, something that you do not know. Vamanadeva revealed to us that satisfaction can only come through surrendering our false ego
to Krishna.
The false ego is the cause of all of our sufferings. We say that the mind is cause of all our sufferings, but the mind is just an instrument. When the mind is being utilized by the pure ego, that I am the eternal servant of God, the mind is our best of friends. But when that same mind is being influenced and utilized by the false ego, that I am this body, I am the enjoyer, I am the Lord of all I survey, then the mind is utilized simply to try to imitate God in so many ways and compete against anyone who tries to take the position that we aspire for. In Srimad Bhagavatam there is the story of Pondraka. Pondraka was a demon. He was actually well educated. He was also very, very successful materially. He had a great kingdom, beautiful palace, so many subjects. And he even convinced all of his followers in his kingdom that he was Lord Vasudeva, that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And no doubt he had a tremendous type of charisma. So much so that he convinced all of his followers, perhaps there were millions of such followers, that he was Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Perhaps he had great mystic powers. Perhaps he was very, very learned. He appeared to an ordinary person to be like God. And therefore he became too much intoxicated in his false ego. The more people worship you, the more it's intolerable when somebody doesn't worship you. This is just the opposite of what we want. We're thinking, everyone that worships me will make me more happy. But it's not like that. Everyone that worships you brings you a certain happiness, but everyone who doesn't worship you brings you even more distress. So Pondraka, although he had so many followers worshiping him as God, he heard the news about Krishna, how Krishna was in Dwarka, and how he was being worshipped as God. And he became outraged, literally furious with envy. That what nonsense, there can be no God but me, I am the Supreme, I am Pondraka, I am the avatar of Vasudeva. And he actually sent a letter to Krishna in Dwarka, telling him, give up the four symbols of Vishnu, they are mine. You have no right. Give up your name and heritage. You are imitating me. I am the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, and I warn you on this very day that if you don't give up trying to artificially take my title, position, and utilize my resources, then I will destroy you. And I will destroy your whole race. And when Krishna received this letter, how did he respond? Who can tell me how he responded? He laughed. He laughed. What is this nonsense? Krishna's laughing at everybody. Everyone in this world is Pondraka consciousness. The only reason why we're not coming to Krishna and directly threatening to attack him is because we're just not as successful as Pondraka in our Pondraka consciousness. we're fighting against little people. If we're a businessman, we fight against a bigger businessman. If we're brahmacharis, we want to give better lectures than the other brahmachari. Or we'll do a little more tapasya. Or we'll be a better actor. Huh? If we're housewives, we'll be a better housewife, better mother, better children. My child has better grades than your child. That means I'm a better mother than you. Huh? What did your child get in exams? Well, mine stood first. I am better mother. I am better father. In this way, so much competition. And even gurus compete. Who has more disciples? Who has bigger temples? Who has written more books? In this way, everybody's competing. And we're just competing amongst each other because we're small. But Pondraka conquered everyone. He was so great. He had no competition amongst his peers. So therefore, he attacked Krishna. If we could conquer all our peers, then we would probably also attack Krishna. We haven't come to that level. Our ego has not developed to that point yet. This is the innate tendency of envy within our hearts. So Krishna laughed. But he laughed with compassion. He was simultaneously laughing at the foolishness of Pondraka, but at the same time he was devising in his mind how he could liberate him from all of this ignorance. So Krishna sent a letter back to Pondraka that you come and soon your body will be eaten by dogs and vultures, you rascal. And Pondraka was insulted. How could anyone say this about him? So he attacked. And ultimately, Krishna made good his promise. He easily slayed Pondraka. When Krishna saw Pondraka wearing all the symbols of Vishnu, it was sad. It was a sad sight. So we may not, in our egoistic pursuit in life, we may not have come to the stage where we're holding conch shells and lotus flowers and clubs and chakras, but in essence we're doing the same thing. We're trying to be enjoyer. We're trying to be the lord of all we survey. We're competing with others. It's like anybody who's against us must be an asura. And I have come to slay the asuras. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, even though he fought this great battle of Kurukshetra, he never was thinking in terms of competing for his own personal ego. He was always in the mood of the servant of the Lord, and he was always most compassionate and loving toward all living beings. He cried when he saw the sorrow that he caused. Krishna had to preach to him, to explain to him how he must continue to perform his duty. Krishna brought him to Bhishma on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to preach to him, to understand how he must fulfill his purpose as the king and how he must see that all the deaths in the battlefield of Kurukshetra were ultimately the will of the Lord and not at all due to his own selfish pursuits. Yudhisthira considered that he was an egoistic person, very selfish. the nature of his humility. Because even to say, I have no ego, I'm selfless, that is another type of ego. Maya is too much. How she's so thorough in keeping us trapped in her illusions. All we can do is just surrender to Krishna. We can't think I'm selfish. We can't think I'm selfless. As soon as we're thinking of I and mine, we're trapped. When we say, I want to enjoy sense gratification, that's false ego. That means you want to be God, the supreme enjoyer. When you say, I have no desire for sense gratification, it's another type of false ego. That means you want to enjoy the position of Krishna's opulence of renunciation. So what are we supposed to say? If we say, I am selfless, that's ego. If we say, I am selfish, that's also ego. This is how thorough Maya is. Somebody is attached to sex life. That's false ego, nothing but false ego. But if somebody else claims and feels and thinks that I am free of sex life, if anyone told you that, what would you think of them? You would think, such false ego? What nonsense. How could he say such a thing? So Maya is very thorough. So all we could do is just surrender to Krishna and stop thinking in terms of I and mine. I am this or I am not this. But we have to start thinking in terms of Krishna. Krishna is this. Krishna has all opulence. He is the supreme renounced. We are all just little insignificant puppets in Krishna's hands. Either directly in Krishna's hands or in the hands of Maya, his external potency. But we are all being controlled by Krishna. We are all surrendering to Krishna. Then we're no longer thinking in terms of I and mine. I am this or I am not this. I am simply Krishna's. I am simply the property of my Gurudev. I am property of the previous acharyas. And whatever I can do is by their will, by their power, by their strength. Yesterday we were discussing the glories of Sri Narottam Das Thakur. If we read in his songs, never does he pray, I am this or I am that. But by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, by the mercy of the great acharyas, perhaps someday I will be able to do this. Perhaps someday I will have the loving service of Radha and Krishna. That is my prayer. By the mercy and glory of Lokanath Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. He was giving all glory, all credit to the Lord's exalted servants and admitting that the only qualification, the only identity he will ever have is being subordinate to their mercy. Then by their mercy we can do something. By their mercy we could restrain ourselves from Maya. By their mercy we can engage in positive spiritual activities. This type of humility, real humility, is the only means of escaping the thorough trappings of Maya in this world. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was such a great soul. And even though he is a Mahabhagavat, who Krishna accepted the position that Yudhisthira was his master at times. But still, even such a soul, when Narada Muni came, Yudhisthira was asking Narada for instructions. And Narada was giving him these instructions. And Yudhisthira was not just he was not just listening superficially or artificially. He was actually so humble, he was listening from the core of his heart, receiving inspiration. However advanced we are in Krishna consciousness, we should always be anxious to hear the glories of the Lord from advanced devotees. We should always be thirsty for the nectar of Krishna Katha. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was the greatest acharya in his realizations on the level of the greatest acharyas. But yet, he would sit and listen to Raghunath Das Goswami every day, very carefully. And he closes each chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Rupa Raghunatha Pade. He closes each chapter by giving all credit to Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. He claims no credit for one word that he has written. The most wonderful, wonderful stories, and at the end of each story, this is all by the mercy of Rupa and Raghunath. This is all coming from them. My head is at their feet. I know nothing but them. And he writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I am writing this literature for my own purification. I am repeating the words of Sri Rupa and Raghunath for my own purification. He was not claiming that I am writing this literature because I am so exalted and I have such deep realizations that I want to liberate the world. But I am repeating the words of the previous acharyas for my own purification. And I invite, and I also worship the lotus feet of anyone who reads this literature. Because anyone who hears these words of Rupa and Raghunath, they will certainly develop love for Lord Chaitanya in detachment from this material world. Therefore I touch their lotus feet. They will all go back to Godhead. Not by my mercy, by the mercy of my gurus. So Narada Muni is explaining to Maharaj Yudhisthira that Krishna is the supreme controller of everything, that we should not be disturbed by the apparent reversals or incomprehensible experiences that come in our life. We should know that ultimately Krishna is the orchestrator of everything, either directly or indirectly, either through his yoga maya potency or maha maya potency. But Krishna's plan is unfolding at all times for everyone. And here Narada, out of great compassion, is indicating to Yudhisthira Maharaj that the Lord has already performed his duties to help the demigods and he is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. In other words, Dhritarashtra, their beloved uncle Vidura, Gandhari, they are about to leave the earth. Make it the final chapter of their activities on this earth are about to come to a close. And Narada Muni is explaining here that they are leaving, soon the Lord will leave, soon his whole dynasty will leave, and at that time you will also leave, all by the arrangement of the Lord. Is there any questions?
We say this prayer, Vancha Kalpata Rupya Shakrpa Sindhu Beva Chapatitanam Pavani Bhavaishnava Namonama. That means we usually, in the heart, we will not be realizing the fact, but then we know that all the Vaishnavas assembled, all the previous Acharyas, it's only by their mercy that we can really survive in Krishna consciousness and we can really progress in devotional service. That means it is clear that irrespective of whether one is an advanced devotee or one is a neophyte devotee or one is a friend or your own level, irrespective of that, all these devotees are our well-wishers and only by the mercy we should be continuing in devotional service. But then when it comes to taking instructions, we usually see that we have to be on that Madhya Madhikari platform where you have to distinguish, well, from this person I should take instructions. But when our friend, a person of the same level or for someone who is junior or quite new, when he says something, then it becomes very difficult for us to take that instruction. We sometimes avoid or we try to take a higher position than them. In other words, indirectly telling him that it's none of your business. I know what I'm supposed to do. So isn't it a sort of a duplicitous nature that we are praying to all the Vaishnavas but at the same time we are not trying to take instructions?
Humility must be executed with discrimination. Otherwise, it is not real humility. If we, out of the pretense of humility, hear wrong instructions and follow those, that is not humility at all. All real attributes that are divine must be based on knowledge and truth. So therefore, through the chain of parampara, our spiritual masters are giving us instructions. And our spiritual lives are dependent on executing those instructions. All of our spiritual advancement is wholly dependent on that principle. If other senior devotees, devotees who are equal to us in social status, or even junior devotees, repeat those same words, then we should accept. We shouldn't. To serve and help others, we may take a senior position, but we should never feel we're in a senior position to anyone. A devotee should never think, I am senior. The devotee should think, I am servant. We may take a senior role only so that we can help someone. But we should never feel senior. We should feel servant. This is Vaishnav culture. So yes, if someone is giving us good instruction, but because we feel that they are not very senior to us, and because of that, we are not willing to accept it, that is
a sign of the false ego. If one of our friends or equal God brothers very seriously cares about us and is repeating something that is very much according to the parampara, according to the mood of our guru, then we should accept it with a grateful heart. And to the degree we're not willing to, we should understand that that is a sign of a particular disease, ego, within us. When we offer the prayer, Banchakalpatarubhyascha, on one level, we are offering our obeisances to the assembled Vaishnavas, especially all those great Vaishnavas who have given their lives in Krishna's seva. But on another level, we are actually in the mood of sadhana. We are, through this prayer, preaching to ourselves. We're reminding ourselves of what our position should be in the assembly of devotees. Even though we may not feel it, we still have ego, false ego. But we are reminding ourselves that this is actually the position that I want. This is the position that I am begging for, praying for. And with the blessings of the devotees, I can achieve that most exalted position. Does that answer your question? So yes, on one level you bow down. Gives you some good instruction. You say, I already know why you're telling me this. So you're saying there's duplicity there? Yes, there's duplicity there. There's so many duplicities there. It is a fact. It is a reality. But how to deal with it? How to overcome it? This is the process. By offering these prayers, by offering these obeisances, by reminding ourselves, by begging for this realization. Then we can gradually develop these realizations.
Two questions are there. Day before yesterday, in the purport, Prabhupada says there are two types of people. One is Sura and Asura. Suras are obedient to God, and Asuras are not obedient, or they rebel. And we see the devatas in the higher planetary systems, demigods. We know that there is higher form of sense gratification, and we hear that many demigods are engaged in this higher form of sense gratification, and sense gratification is completely against the principle of Bhagavad Gita or will of Krishna. Sense gratification is considered to be sinful activity. The first question is how we should understand that suras are obedient. And second question is, those who are not pure devotees, those who are trying to be a devotee, means they are not completely freed from desires of sense gratification. So that means to some extent we have this asuri tendency. So in which category we come, like?
So in other words, what you're saying is anyone who is not absolutely purified Paramhamsa Mahabhagavat is an asura, because they still have some tendencies for sense gratification. That is not how Krishna is explaining.
the demigods may have desires for sense gratification, but they are all obediently trying to fulfill the order of the Lord in their actions. And in this way, they are gradually becoming purified from their desires for sense gratification. Similarly, are you a devotee? Are these other people devotees? They may have desires for sense gratification, but they are obedient to the will of the Lord, and through that obedience, they are becoming purified from their desires for sense gratification. So therefore, they are godly, because they are on the path of God consciousness. That is the difference.
You mentioned in the class about pure ego, false ego and pure ego. Pure ego, you said, is that to consider that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. Maharaj, sometimes when we listen to Mayavadi's talk, because we've read Srila Prabhupada's books and we've heard your lectures, we are convinced that what Srila Prabhupada says is right and what these people are saying is wrong. So even in our heart we know that they're saying is wrong, and we are so convinced about it that, you know, some kind of ego creeps in. Yes, what we are doing is right. So is that okay? Or sometimes after the Bhagavad Gita class here, you know, when the people come from outside, we hear them talking that, oh, these people are, you know, outsiders. These people are just sticking on to what Prabhupada is saying. They don't want to listen to anything else. And then we say, huh, you know, like, oh yeah, the devotees are just listening, are just repeating what Prabhupada says. So is that also a kind of ego? What kind of ego is it?
If you think that you are better than them, that is false ego. If you think that by the mercy of Guru Maharaj and Srila, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, I have the truth, that is real ego. It is not your greatness. It is the greatness of His divine grace that separates you from the others. But you should know, if they accept that divine grace, then they will be better than you. So you should not try to hide it from them so that you can remain better. You should try to make everyone better than you by giving everyone the chance to be Krishna conscious. And second of all, you should not be listening to Mayavadi speakers. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, listening to Mayavadi philosophy, even if you are living in Vaikuntha, you will fall down. Devotees will not listen to Mayavad. They will not read Mayavad books. They will not go to Mayavad here, speakers. Why? Because they know that that tendency is so dangerous to want to be God, and it's so displeasing to our hearts, and it's so subtly contaminating to the ego. Therefore, that is a warning that has been given to us. And today, because the whole system of real spiritual life is so much misunderstood, people are so egoistic. Everyone wants to be a free, independent thinker. Therefore, they criticize. You're just repeating what your guru says. But that's all Brahma did, and that's all Narada did, and that's all Vedavyas did, and that's all Madhvacharya did, and that's all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, and Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami, and Raghunath Das Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. That's all Prabhupada did, Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Siddhanta. That's all they did, is repeat their gurus. Repeating Guru means repeating Krishna. Otherwise you're giving your own ideas. People are very proud of their own ideas. So this is the age of Kali Yuga. People think it's glorious to speculate and to just gather information from so many sources that you don't even know where they're coming from, just so you have a wide spectrum of dialogue. We have seen people, they just get so much information from so many sources just to show people how much they know about everything. But actually, they speak all nonsense. They don't know the spirit or the essence of anything. Somebody speaks, they want to show everybody, I know so much about this religion, that religion, and every other religion. But it's all academic gyan, material gyan. You cannot understand any real religion unless you understand from the parampara of the realized souls. It's all bogus. It's all just another decoration of your false ego. So yes, we don't want to know everything about what everybody's saying. We want to know what is the truth, and we want to repeat the truth. We want to help others. We don't want to just show off how much we know to others. We want to help them. We want to save them. We want to give them something. Something that will liberate them. Yes, one more.
Said that not forgotten is not forgiven. Now, forgetfulness comes from Krishna. So how do we seek forgetfulness? I mean, we would like something to be forgotten.
What do you mean?
Forgiveness, but we may have forgiven but not forgotten. But he said that not forgotten is not forgiven.
No, that's not true. Forgiven means, it doesn't mean you forget that it ever happened. In that case, we should all get amnesia. That would be the liberated state. No, you can remember, but how you remember? It means we should, forgetfulness is in the sense that we hold nothing against that person. We understand that due to some mistake, some disease, that person has acted in such a way. But we understand that ultimately that person is the spirit soul, part of Krishna. And we all make mistakes. In the neophyte state of Krishna consciousness, we're all making mistakes. Even the demons, when they come to Krishna consciousness, they have made so many mistakes. It's like there is examples. We told a story about those dacoits who made every endeavor to, they wanted to kill Nityananda Prabhu. Jagai and Madhai, they blasphemed him, they insulted him, they beat him on the head, they wanted to kill him. But he forgave them. He understood. You're acting intoxicated by the disease of Maya. So what? That's not important. The important thing is you're trying to reform. So in the process of trying to purify ourselves, we still have certain conditionings, we still may make certain mistakes. Prabhupada explained that if somebody is in the shower, even if there's some dirt still on them, we should honor them that they're trying to get clean. So we must forgive them. If you cannot forgive, you will not be forgiven. If you cannot forgive a person for the mistakes he commits to you, you will never be forgiven for the mistakes you are committing. And you have committed so many mistakes. We all have. So real forgiveness doesn't mean you forget it ever happened. It means with transcendental knowledge and understanding and humility, you overcome the lower conception. You do not interpret it the same way as you do, as a materialistic person does. Doesn't mean forget. Do you understand? It means to deal with it with humility and knowledge.
Hare Krishna. I want to ask you that after, like, we deal with so many situations in day in and day out, and we don't even know that in what situation we develop false ego or true ego, and so on and so forth. So what is the end result? What is the net result?
First we must very carefully accept guidance and training in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise we will never be able to understand these things. First we must establish the basic principles in our life by which we can become purified and overcome our false ego. And then through knowledge and realization and guidance from those who have knowledge and realization, we can detect what is real ego and false ego at every moment. But at the beginning stages, we have no idea. So at the beginning, understand you're not this body. Understand that you're not God. You are eternally the servant of God. And engage in activities that are conducive to that realization. Chant the holy names of the Lord each day. Read the scriptures every day. Come and associate with devotees very regularly. Follow the four regulative principles of devotional service. If we act on this platform, then our basic life is on the premise of real ego, that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And gradually through this we become purified, and as we become more and more and more purified, we become more and more perceptive of what is real humility and what is the false ego. And then we have to act accordingly. But you do not know. Without guru, without advanced Vaishnavas guiding you, directing you, step by step, you'll never know. When we accept their shelter through their guidance and instructions, then we know everything. Do you understand? In this modern age, people don't want guru. People don't want to take shelter of the advanced Vaishnavas. Why? Because if they do, their ego is doomed. And the reason why they don't is because of their false ego. Their false ego wants to think, I am God, I can interpret God's ways, I can follow God my way, I know. People do not accept Guru or Vaishnavas simply because they are enslaved, entrapped, they are victimized by their false egos. And unless they do that, there's no escape. There's no question of understanding God without advanced guidance. No question. God Himself has said, but we want to be 20th century free-thinking sadhus. But there is no such thing. It is all a hoax. It is all the influence of Kali. Anyone who says to you, we have seen big scholars, they know so many slokas, big professors, they're no guru. They think they're so learned. But they're puffed up and they have no realization of God. So what is the use? And they will say that you are all weak, you are all less, because you're just repeating like parrots. You're just hearing. But I have discovered the truths through my own intellect and through my own experiences. They're not glorifying God, they're glorifying their own egos. They're simply slaves of the ego. So we do not want to be like that. The time of death, they will not be able to remember Krishna. The time of death, they will be thinking about their own glories. And they'll see how it's all being torn away from them. They'll see themselves helpless. And they'll have no shelter. Their lives were wasted. So the only way to overcome the ego is to humble ourselves and take shelter of Guru and great Vaishnavas. There's no other way. To accept the truth from them and to follow them. That is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign of knowledge. By Krishna's standard, there's no other way. Srila Prabhupada ki.